Still no Bruce MacArthur sentence. Nope, not yet. Stay tuned. We've got all kinds of news happening this afternoon. Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7. Matt Brand, all of the producers here at the radio station today helping us out. We didn't come up with a Twitter poll question. It was something for us to think about, weigh, consider, and
might even just think of something of my own and post it without even telling you. Who knows?
That would be awesome if you did that.
Oh,
okay. I completely encourage independence.
All right.
Absolutely.
Look out. You're not going to like it.
Spread your tiny wings and fly. Sorry. Snowbird. We're going to talk about collecting scales to destroy them. We'll do that. They don't bring joy. No sparking of joy. You were tweeting. You going to tweet?
What?
Dr. Boris Warm.
Wings, so I was doing the bird sound effects.
Oh, that's all. Okay. Yeah. All right. Dr. Boris Warm, could humans be eating their way into mass extinction, or at least a mass extinction event? We're going to talk to the operator of a blockchain company at the former DeBert Cold War, the Diefenbunker, as it's known. Reading a story yesterday, and some experts in the cryptocurrency field in the Bitcoin world are saying there is no money, that this conversation about the millions of dollars, $250 million, there's no evidence that it exists. At least that's what some are saying. What does it say for the whole blockchain thing, the cold wallet story, the whole story about this chap from Fall River who apparently had a new will just 12 days before his death, leaving everything to his wife?
I think it means put all your money under your mattress.
Nah, that's not safe. Unless you have a smoke detector and a fire extinguisher. Even then. We're going to talk about brewing. Well, Todd the Beer Dude, always on a Friday. But Adam Bauer, owner of Shipwright Brewing Company in Lunenburg, that's still to come. It was on February 6th of 2015 that a major ruling was made by the Supreme Court of Canada. Its decision, Carter versus Canada, ruled Section 14, Paragraph 241B of the Criminal Code unconstitutional because they prohibit physicians from assisting in the consensual death of another person. That is exactly why this week we heard Audrey Parker's voice, her last message to Canadians. It was released, and it's all about trying to affect change with Canada's medical assistance in dying legislation. We spoke with Kimberly King last fall, and she is back with us on the program this afternoon. And Kimberly King, how have you been?
Well, it's been an interesting 3 months, Sheldon, that's for sure, but happy to be here today to talk about Audrey's amendment and to keep this really important conversation going.
I made a promise that we would keep the conversation going. I saw the video that was released earlier in this week, and clearly there's a long-term game plan here for this messaging. And were you there when Audrey recorded this message?
Yeah, it was recorded in her living room 3 days before she died. And, you know, it was so important for Audrey to make that video, to have that lasting, strong message for Canadians to understand exactly what the challenge was with our MAID law, what the flaw was, and to encourage some support.
You know, she looks very much at peace. She looks very, she looks good. I'm sorry to say, but when I see this, and it's hard to believe that she would find the courage. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah. Well, Audrey's last days were definitely spent in an advocacy role. And despite Sheldon, we've had that comment by so many people. My goodness, she looks so great. Remember, Audrey was a makeup artist and stylist. So, you know, she knew how to cover up really the tremendous pain that she was actually experiencing and put that beautiful face forward. But I think really, you know, what gave her the most strength is knowing that the video and all the messages and all the interviews that she did, you know, in that month to 6 weeks prior to her death was going to stand for something, and her death was going to stand for something. So she said to us in her last couple of weeks, "I feel like I'm my best version of myself." And that's pretty powerful when you think about what was really happening in her body and what was ahead of her.
Very much in the outside. What do you know about what was going on the inside? I'm not talking medically. I'm wondering because I know she said this. It was described in the news release a cruel game of chicken, and this is again why we're talking about trying to make these changes to the Canadian medical assistance and dying legislation, which means you need to in the last few days again consent. And she was worried about that. What do you know about what was going on the inside?
Yeah. Well, it was a struggle. There's no question. When we first found out about MAID, I was with Audrey when she was at her oncologist appointment. It would be about a year ago, month, and she was overjoyed to understand that this would be something she could access, that she would, you know, she went through the rigorous screening, she became assessed and approved for it, and it gave her comfort, like just an unbelievable amount of comfort. And later on, we fast forward to the fall of last year when her cancer was starting to spread to the lining of her brain, and the fear of losing capacity became quite, you know, a potential. And that's when we really started to realize this very twisty, kind of difficult hook to the law, that so it's not even Sheldon a couple days before, moments before, immediately before, you know, MAID is invoked, you have to be able to say, yes, this is what I want. So what we're asking for and what we want Canadians to understand is that for those people who are assessed and approved, we want to have this late stage consent removed so that when your wishes are made, once you've gone through all this rigorous screening, that your wishes stay intact even if you lose mental capacity.
There is a certain population in Canada who disagree with this in its entirety for whatever reason, a variety of reasons. There are others who say we don't need legislation if someone wants to take the steps to end their life, they can do this. They can do that. Others worry that people might change their mind. Audrey was committed to this.
Well, that's right. But I think what's, again, important to think about the category that we're talking about, and I'll keep saying this because it's so important. There's been all sorts of reports out there, and it can get a little bit cloudy. We are talking about those people that are assessed and approved. Their death is imminent. They are in a continual state of decline. They are generally suffering excruciating pain. So this whole notion of changing mind, that could be applied to people perhaps who are suffering from mental health issues or dementia or other things. We are talking about a category of people where it is, you know, it is just not, that's not where they're going to go. They're not going to want to say, well, I'm changing my mind on this. And, you know, what I also want to speak to today and to your listeners is, as friends and family of, you know, of the loved one of Audrey, you know, it was so important for us to help support her and that her wishes, you know, would be carried out. And if with the removal of the late stage consent, you know, as I said, that wish of the patient, it will stand. And then nobody else has to intervene or wonder or worry. You know, it's there. It's a part of it. And what it would look like, and I'm not a legislative expert by any stretch, but what it would look like is if we had late stage consent removed, there would be something like a patient declaration that the patient would fill out. And that would deal with what would happen in the case of loss of capacity or if they lost consciousness. And it would be carried out in that way specific to that patient.
And I don't in any way want to diminish what you're saying, because we went and did our will not long ago, and a lawyer said to us, you know, there is a provision, some call it a living will, some call it power of attorney. We already have mechanisms that recognize exactly what it is that you're describing through this. The only difference is that the outcome is much more imminent than it is for me. I have no idea when I'm going. Audrey did.
Right.
Audrey did.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, when you think about it, I mean, this was a very complex piece of legislation. And, you know, as much as it's frustrating to have, you know, to have my dear girlfriend end her life early, I mean, I'm thankful, and Audrey said this, very thankful that we have MAID in Canada, but it needs to go further. There's a flaw in it, and that's why she's calling for, you know, for Audrey's amendment, and she's calling for it from the afterlife. And we're so proud of her to have had that thought to work with Dying with Dignity Canada. And I do want to mention them. It's an organization that has been really lifting up Audrey's message and helping us, you know, get it out there. And, you know, we're very thankful. So I do want to mention, Sheldon, that we have an e-petition that has been started. We have close to 5,000 people who have signed it. It is directed to our new Justice Minister, David Lametti, and it calls for a change in legislation to remove late-stage consent. It takes about 30 seconds to fill out if that's something that people feel motivated to do. And, you know, we want to have, and I'm your previous interviewee, you know, talking also about e-petition, and they are important to send the strong message. But along with also, as Audrey talked about in the video, you know, writing to your MP, you know, having a voice. Because, you know, I would say to your listeners as well, even if there's not somebody in your world who's, you know, there's an imminent end of life, this is a law that needs shaping, it needs improving, and it is something that we are all going to have to face at one point, whether it's ourselves or family, and it really is something worth looking into and understanding better.
We will be speaking with Shanaz Gokul from Dying with Dignity Canada on the show on Monday. You raise some great issues as to why we should do this today, why people should go to this website now and sign. And there is a new Minister of Health, hopefully with perhaps a different perspective or attitude than the former minister, who said, no, we're fine with it the way it is. This is a time for people to make their voices heard. You know what?
Time is critical for sure right now. We do have a window, and we really need to push it.
I don't know how you find the strength, but I'm sure part of it is Audrey's determination and, again, an amazing constitution when it comes to making her wishes known. Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Thanks so much, Sheldon. We appreciate your support.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Kimberly King is Audrey Parker's last of kin, next of kin. We're going to take a break, and we've spoken in the past with Moja Lander. This week, obviously, there was an announcement that the folks involved with the Stadium Conversation CFL team decided, not as many bells and whistles. Will that move this along any sooner? Moja's already been clear, saying there's no obvious measure that you could say the stadium's going to make money. It's a political decision. If government's involved, if government's not involved, maybe this is a step closer to it without putting in tax dollars. We'll find out. We'll hear from the economics professor. He's at Concordia, but he's coming back to Dow this coming spring semester. Moja Lander on the show right after this. It's weird. I can't find my pen. I don't know that I need a pen. It's like David Letterman. He had a pencil. He had it in his hand all the time, and it had an eraser in both ends. Just something to hold. Found one. Serial killer Bruce MacArthur, 67, pleaded guilty. He's not eligible for parole for 25 years. He'll be 92 when he can actually apply, but that's only for him to be able to apply. There's absolutely no guarantee he will receive any kind of early release. Life is life. Well, you'll be 92. How many 92-year-old inmates are there? I don't know. There could have been the American system, you know, you've got 2,000 years, you've got 189, you've got whatever. But the Crown had said no parole for 50 years. Defense said 25. 25 is what it was. They just announced that. Stay tuned for more on that. All right, let's talk stadium, shall we? Okay. Where's my story? Okay. Atlantic Schooners scale back. Okay. CFL stadium plans. Okay. So it's only $130 million. That's a bargain at that price. Oh, no bells and whistles. Not a Shangri-La type stadium, says the owners or the folks behind Atlantic Schooners Sport and Entertainment. Anthony LeBlanc was saying, yeah, well, we could scale it down. We can scale it back. We can make it less expensive. Does that mean? Is there any chance? Will it happen? Can we foresee a future in Halifax with a stadium that will be built that will not include money from taxpayers? Moja Lander's mentioned. He teaches, he's a sport fan for one. He's at Concordia. He's going to be back at Dalhousie this coming spring. Welcome back to the show, Moja. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thanks.
Downsized, eh? So does this help? Does this perhaps make it a little easier for people to say, yeah, I can get on board. It's only $130 million now.
It does help. The idea, though, of the no bells and whistles, I saw in a recent article that was saying that the no bells and whistles system still involves a dome. So I'm not exactly sure how no bells and whistles it is. I also saw that they were saying that they're going to replace the upper deck with benches instead of seats. And I don't know that that's really comfortable for fans. You know, these days watching football is so much a better experience on TV than live. All the replays and the angles and the commercial breaks and kind of the freedom to sit on your couch and enjoy it, you start putting wooden benches in the upper deck. I don't know that that's going to make it more enticing to the fans. So I'm not exactly sure that they're selecting the right bells and whistles to chop.
When this conversation that you and I started, when we started to first hear about this, you said, really, there are no models, there are no examples where a stadium has made money that you could find. $130 million takes a little bit of the pressure off. Can there still be a case where this could be financed without government help?
Look, even at the higher price, it could be financed without help. It's just an issue of what is Maritime prepared to put in of their own money. If they want to put up all their money themselves, then this can entirely be done, and it can be done quickly. But, most sports ownership groups, of course, would like to try and make the argument that any arena or stadium is partly beneficial to the city that receives it, and therefore it's deserving of public funds. So at this point, it's still the ongoing of private ownership versus public funds, and which one's going to blink first, and how fast and how badly does Halifax want a CFL team?
Earlier this week, Anthony LeBlanc spoke with our Rick Howe, and well, they're still looking at Shannon Park, still working with Canada Lands, trying to find a deal. You're still convinced that's not the best place for it?
No, it's not the best place, and I think they would admit that. And I would certainly agree with them that, you know, probably the best locations are also probably very difficult to come by. Just land in downtown Halifax is extremely hard to come by, and the amount of space needed to build even a slimmed down 24,000 seat stadium is going to be hard. But I think settling for a bad solution merely for it just being a solution is probably not in the best long-term interest of the Atlantic Schooners.
2020, they want a team in place. That seems to be an aggressive timeline.
It's very aggressive. I mean, there's nothing in place to suggest 2020 is even reasonable, right? You don't have anything related to on-field operations. You don't have a general manager. You don't have a coach. You don't have scouting staff. You don't have any of the trainers and all of the personnel that are behind the scenes to make this go. It's not there. You don't have even an invitation from the CFL to start yet. You have to have the other nine owners prepared. Players on existing teams need to realize that they could be playing in Halifax in 18 months' time. Like, it's just, it's way too ambitious. Is it possible? Anything's possible. But again, I think that there's maybe a little bit of a muddled rush here just to make it happen. And I think that's probably because of the bad memories that a lot of people in Atlantic Canada have of this on-again, off-again love affair with the CFL that just never seems to materialize.
Sportsnet reporting, Atlantic Schooners could begin CFL play in Moncton, talking about an exhibition game. Is that a shot across the bow to council? We've got an election in 2020 in Halifax.
Yeah, I don't want to see that too much as a conspiracy theory. Moncton has a much smaller population base, so fine, they have a stadium that's ready to roll, and you can certainly host exhibition games there. You can host preseason games. Heck, you can even put Halifax there for the first year or two, and that would be acceptable. But given a choice between a population area of, say, around 100,000 versus a population area around 400,000, the Moncton model is not long-term viable for the CFL. So I don't know that this is really to kind of motivate Halifax to move and make a decision. I think it's more just they want to try and keep some sort of momentum moving that there's going to be CFL in Atlantic Canada.
Moja, you're a sport fan. You're not against this team out of principle, are you?
No, not at all. I as a sports fan, I think it's great. I think that, you know, 10 teams is perfect for the Canadian Football League. And, I'm out in Halifax usually every summer, so I'm going to be trying to take in a game when I'm out there. It has nothing to do with Halifax, and it has nothing to do with this ownership group. It's, as a sports fan, there's nothing worse than falling in love with a team and then having it ripped from you. I've seen it with my own fandom and the teams that I support, and seeing them move cities and kind of remembering that feeling of having it taken away. Get it right the first time. You don't have to worry about it a second time.
Moja Lander, thanks for doing this, and have a great weekend. Look forward to connecting when you're back in Halifax.
You got it. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Moja Lander has mentioned an economics professor who specializes in sport entertainment, looking at the numbers. And yeah, again, he's a fan. And if you're going to do it right, do it the first time. Let's talk about that later. Not now. News is next. After that, it's, does your scale in the bathroom spark joy or anxiety? If it's the latter, how would you like to smash it with a hammer?
What scale?
We'll be right back after this news update. Well, look, Matthew Moore is out and about and covering that story we talked about a little bit at the top of the show. A group of Nova Scotians are asking for a formal apology were in Ottawa trying to get the attention of government to stop things like carding and stops and routine checks that appear to be targeting one community over another. Talking about a security guard. I don't mean to sound racist, but you're going to have to do something about the dark-skinned group. Ouch. So Matthew's there. So I didn't get the news release. We'll keep watching for that, Producer Matt. Where did you first catch wind of this? Where did that story come from?
It was actually The Objective. So there's a local news agency two young journalism grads from King's.
Yes.
And called The Objective. That was the first place I saw on Twitter last night.
Mm-hmm.
And then, here we are.
Matthew's down at the Dixon Center for Blackout 2019. Hashtag. All right. Serious issue, racial profiling. Stay tuned for more on that. And what else is coming up? Well, it's the afternoon show here on News 95.7. I'm seeing that, that whole cryptocurrency story is taking a weird twist. Blockchain and the wallet, the cold wallet. Some are suggesting the money that we're all fixated on because the password is missing doesn't exist. It's a front page story in the Herald today. I don't know if you caught it. A family friend of the young man, the 30-year-old, the only guy with the password, saying that, oh, no, there was nothing sinister about his death. This is about Gerald Cotton. Just happened to pick up the story today. And what does this mean? We'll find out more, obviously, maybe never, by the sounds of things. We're going to be chatting with Dr. Boris Worm. Boris is with Dalhousie University. Mass extinction event. What? Let's talk about that. We'll talk about the Grammys with Eric Alper. Yes, that Eric Alper. That'll be happening in the next 15 minutes or so, 10, 15 minutes. Right now, let's talk about sparking joy in your life. This is obviously a trend, a phenomenon. People are talking about, getting rid of the excess stuff in their lives, the things that they're perhaps not using, that aren't useful, or as Marie Kondo says, don't spark joy. We have with us this afternoon the executive director of Eating Disorders Nova Scotia, Shailene Jones, is back with us on the program. Shailene, how are you today?
Hey, Sheldon. I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Great.
You know, we keep talking about, the Marie Kondo method, mm-hmm. and this idea that you don't want people to, if you're not happy with your bathroom scale, where did this idea come from to collect bathroom scales?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of our peer support mentors took part in a scale smashing, which are generally held in conjunction with awareness-raising events for eating disorders. So it's kind of a phenomenon that's been happening for a number of years across Canada. And we're just wrapping up Eating Disorders Awareness Week. And we thought, it would be kind of liberating and fun in a way to smash our scales. And, for folks who are in recovery from an eating disorder, certainly stopping using a scale and breaking free from those external ways of measuring oneself are really encouraged. So it just kind of came all together, and we've had a lot of interest.
A lot of conversation about this. Mm-hmm. And what is the role? What will Eating Disorders Nova Scotia be doing? How are you facilitating this?
Yeah, so we're actually working really closely with The Rage Room, which is a new company in the North End. So we're supporting a local business. And we've had folks donating scales and other smashable items, things that can be easily broken. So we've had folks who have participated in our programs and just folks in the community decorate them with messages they want to send back to the wellness and dieting industry. And then on Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5, we'll be at the Rage Room. They're going to be supplying crowbars and sledgehammers. We've got all these great things to smash up. So we're doing it as a fundraiser to raise some funds for our peer support program.
Oh, okay. I was wondering why, other than the joy of being able to do this, it's a way to raise money. Okay. All right.
We smashed the scale on Global yesterday morning, and it was actually very, very fun. So I'm really looking forward to Sunday.
You didn't give a hammer to Paul Brothers, did you?
We did. Yeah. Oh. He destroyed the scale.
Well, I suppose. I like Paul. I'm just making fun. So you say this is to help to raise a few dollars for peer support. Tell us about peer support.
Yeah. So our organization has been helping support folks through recovery through peer support programs. So by peer support, what we mean is folks who have lived through an eating disorder, have come out the other side, have been living in recovery, and have been socially trained to be kind of supporters and cheerleaders and mentors to folks who are currently struggling with this illness. So our peer support programs, and we offer one-on-one mentoring. We have groups. We have an online chat. We just got funding from Bell Let's Talk to start offering our programs online. So all these different ways of meeting people where they're at in a super easy to access, really comfortable environment for folks to get some tools and ideas on how to strengthen their own recovery process.
Never read the comments. Don't read the comments. I want to ask you about that, because when we last had a story from Eating Disorders Nova Scotia, and it was about sharing diet and weight loss goals online and how that for some people might be a trigger, and others are going, come on, really? What is it that, why bring up that as part of this conversation? Why should we talk about how some things may be a trigger for others?
That's a great question, and it's because at the heart of eating disorders is this cultural idea that thin is healthy and that we should be eating clean and trying to rid our bodies of toxins and that our weight is a measure of our value as human beings. And those kind of cultural beliefs that we hold, you know, that dieting, that if you want to lose weight, you need to eat less and move more, and that being thinner and lighter is always better. These tightly held cultural beliefs that we have create an environment where eating disorders can thrive. And so if we're going to really move the needle on the prevalence of eating disorders, we have to address some of those underlying core beliefs that we as a society hold.
Shailene Jones, Executive Director, Eating Disorders Nova Scotia, our guest. I don't ever remember growing up with a bathroom scale in the house. We don't have one now. Our kids didn't grow up in that environment. But I won't lie. If I go to a friend's, if I go to the in-laws and there's one there, I'll step on them. Should I take their scale up so we can smash them?
If it's not bringing them joy, why not? You know, we know that the consequences of being body shamed and the stigma of carrying extra weight and living in a larger body, the discrimination that people face because of that often has a more detrimental effect than any of the health reasons, health consequences associated with carrying extra weight. So I say, let's just ditch the weight loss tools altogether and, you know, focus on our great new Canada Health Guide and focus on putting our efforts into things that bring us joy.
You must be clear also that in some instances, it's not about people who are in a position where they want to reduce their weight. There are other people who have struggles with eating disorders who can't gain weight or who don't want to gain weight for other reasons.
That's a really, you've got some great questions today. Yeah, so I think, you know, our idea of what someone with an eating disorder, how that person looks, we kind of assume that person is very slim and very thin. And we kind of associate the word eating disorders with anorexia and that body type. And that's actually the least common of all the eating disorders. So we really can't tell what someone might be struggling with by the size and shape of their body. And folks from all different backgrounds are, you know, at risk for developing an eating disorder, but particularly those who have been bullied because of their weight. That puts them in a whole new risk category for developing an eating disorder. Right. And these are really complex, biologically driven illnesses. So the DSM-5, you know, when we changed the definitions, the criteria for what eating disorders are, we used to say with anorexia, there was a refusal to maintain a normal weight. And researchers and clinicians have realized that that's a symptom of the illness. And it's not that folks don't want to gain weight or don't want to eat, it's that the illness is preventing them from doing so. Certainly. So it is a very complex illness.
If someone wants to help out, maybe donate or come along, what do we do? How do we connect people who may be listening today who say, yeah, this sounds, I'm absolutely down with this. How do we do this?
We do have a couple spots left, so they can email us, which is info@eatingdisordersns.ca. They can search our event on Eventbrite. They can go to our website, which is eatingdisordersns.ca, and they can follow the links to register for the event there.
Shailene Jones, pleasure to get you back here with us on the radio, and have a great day tomorrow. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, actually, it's Sunday, but yeah, thanks Sunday. So much, Sheldon. Great chatting with you.
Well, have fun tomorrow, and then have more fun on Sunday.
I will. Thanks so much, Sheldon.
All right, take care. Okay, the event is on February 10th. Today's the 8th, 2 days from now. Doing the maths. Calculations. Did you hear that story about the guy from India who's suing his parents for giving birth to him? You laugh. It's a thing. He's wearing the fake beard. He's got the dark sunglasses on. Indian man suing parents for giving birth to him. You know what I love about this story?
No.
You want to guess what I love about this story?
The beard?
Oh, the beard's pretty cool. That's pretty sweet fake beard. The fact that both of his parents are lawyers.
Oh, wow.
They went, we certainly, and they're laughing. A few of the quotes I read, they're laughing about it, going, well, that's pretty awesome that he's going to try and sue his two lawyer parents over us giving birth to him. Said he's been feeling this way since he was about 5. Huh. I didn't ask to be brought into this world.
Got to be careful. Could set a precedent.
That's funny. You know, they had me just, you know, they could have got a dog instead. I was purely for their own.
He might not be wrong.
Their own edification, their own entertainment. I think he's pretty much living up to that because that's pretty funny. That's pretty entertaining.
Sometimes you know we kind of talk to them the same way.
I thought it was satire when I saw it, and I still think it's satire.
Who knows anymore?
I still think it's satire. Are you down with the Drake? is that the no?
I'm not, no.
How about the Cardi B? The Post Malone?
I can't keep up here. I like what Cardi B has to say sometimes.
Kendrick Lamar.
I like Kendrick, yeah. We hit one that I'm into.
I'm getting older. The Grammys, I recognize fewer and fewer of the faces from music. I recognize them from Entertainment Tonight shows. Not that one brand specifically. Anyways, Drake is not up for... He's got one of the biggest selling albums ever.
Apparently he didn't... For the Junos, you mean?
Yeah, and he has no chance of winning a Juno.
Well, he didn't submit, is what I read.
Well, and that's weird, isn't it?
No.
What do you mean, no?
I don't want to get myself in trouble here.
It's not worth it. It's not valuable. There's no real cachet.
I don't... I
threw an endangered whitefish into your lap today, right now.
Perhaps
flip, flop, flop,
to some, flop, perhaps flop. Someone with as much star power as Drake
flop, flop.
Might see
flip, flop, flop,
the Junos as
flop, flop, flop,
less
flop.
Important. Flop, I don't flop, feel that flop. Way, but some like Drake might. Obviously he does. That was the decision he made. So.
Okay, well that Eric Alper is going to join us in a few seconds. And I'll throw the fish into his lap. He'll do great. He's always great. Talking about entertainment. What does it say here about
I wasn't great. That wasn't great.
Yeah, it was.
It was pretty bad.
I felt it was pretty good. Eric Alper, publicist, music commentator, content creator, shameless idealist. Drake and the Juno / Grammys and the other Canadian stories right after this. Happy Friday. We're going to join the Maritime Beer Report coming up in about an hour's time and Higher Learning after 3 o'clock. Hopefully no incidents on the bridge to preclude our guests from arriving in studio. We'll be talking about blockchain and the mysterious money, that big worldwide story. Some experts, some in the field of cryptocurrency say there's really some doubt on whether $250 million is actually sitting on somebody's laptop, some dude from Fall River, who just 11 days before he died unexpectedly in India, had rewritten his will. I know I'm all over the place with that, but anyway, stay tuned. I'll just leave it at that. The Grammy Awards are coming up, and so are the Junos. The Junos, the Canadian Junos, are 2019 Junos. When? Oh, March 11th. On the line with us to talk a little bit about publicist, music commentator, content creator, shameless idealist, Eric Alper. Hello, that Eric Alper. How are you, sir?
Hello, that Sheldon McLeod. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's a Friday. Can't be anything but great. I was just reading an article on the New York Times. Can the Grammys please anyone? Oi. there won't be any controversy this Sunday night, will there?
Well, so far, it's actually started. I mean, it started the second that the final Grammy nomination came out, because people like to talk about who got snubbed or who didn't play the game politically, how come Drake applied for the Grammys but not the Juno Award. And even today, the latest controversy is that Ariana Grande, certainly one of the world's biggest selling pop artists, who she was proposed to play the Grammys. She was all set to open up the actual broadcast performance part of it. But allegedly, the Grammy people told her that they wanted her to do a medley of her songs rather than just stick with her one current hit. The Grammys came out saying that Ariana couldn't get her schedule and the production done on time. Ariana decided to go on Twitter yesterday and say that that was all a lie and that the reason why she's not performing is because she didn't want to do a mixed bag of all of her songs. She wanted to just stick with the current hit. So that's what they're walking into. So right now, as it stands, it looks like that some of the world's biggest stars, including Ariana Grande, won't be actually at the Grammy Awards, not even on stage, but forget about them being in the audience.
There's always been this love-hate relationship with the industry when you talk about who wins a Grammy, who deserves a Grammy, who comes up with the stupid categories. Some of them make a little to no sense. But is there any value in anymore in being a Grammy Award-winning artist? Does that help sell tickets so you see bums in seats and dollars in the bank account?
For sure. And certainly it's changing a little bit. You know, because we're living in a social media dominated world where this is how we all find out about news. It's actually a little bit bizarre to go back into the last 12 months worth of music releases and revisit them and put them on a huge scale, considering that most of these albums have already pretty much been forgotten about. But if you're a manager, if you're a booking agent, if you're a publicist, you love the Grammys because this is the one area where you can actually see a bump in streams, a bump in sales, and a bump in credibility, knowing that you can now walk around saying that you are representing a Grammy Award winner.
We've got Eric Alper here with us, and we're talking about the Grammys. You mentioned it, and we were chatting about it just before we brought you on the show. Drake, up for a Grammy. He's had a tremendous amount of success in the United States. Not even in the running for Juno this year, and that's by choice?
Yeah, it is by choice. He told his record label and his management team not to submit for the Junos anymore. It all started a number of years ago during the year that Drake was hosting the Junos, and he was up for 6 Juno Award nominations, including Rap of the Year, and didn't win any of them. And, you know, the thought process is, it's that he was so upset and so mad at that he refused to attend any other Juno Awards or even have his team submit. So that's why he's only submitting to the Grammy Awards. And certainly now there's no talk of him actually being there. But I think for Drake, I think it's a personal disgruntlement that he's got now with the Juno Awards, which is a shame because he's not only one of Canada's biggest artists, he's one of the world's biggest artists. And for him not to acknowledge the Junos or even submit for any of the categories is a real shame. And I hope that, you know, somewhere along the line, those two parties can make up.
So clearly the Academy that votes on the Grammys, we know in Canada, the group that looks after the nominees, the nomination process. It's always been a sneaking suspicion of mine that you're invited to perform because there's probably a good chance you're going to win an award and they want you there, not an empty seat.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen at all, as far as I know, with the Juno Awards. In fact, I can pretty much say and bet the house that that doesn't happen. I've been on the various Juno committees and listening committees and judging panels for the last 20, 25 years, and there's no directive coming from anybody that says, well, we need to make this person win or else they're not going to show up. I think some of the lesser, more quality award shows like the American Music Awards or the Brit Awards, for instance, ones that, you know, they're more of an entertainment-based award shows. Those certainly you can imagine that if you decide to show up, you're guaranteed to walk home with something, but not so with the Grammys or the Junos because of the selection process and the sheer amount of people who vote. Even if Drake is on Universal Music, which he is, and they're the most dominant record label in the world, having a lot more votes than anybody else combined, they still can't make anybody win, even if they were all voting for Drake, because the strength in numbers doesn't necessarily count, because there's more people that would not want him to win and vote for their own artist.
I'm getting up in years. It's easy for us to, for me to look at it and go, I really am not familiar with much of the music that's being nominated for Album of the Year anymore. but that said, what performance should I see? What do you think will be the highlight of the night?
I think you've got to keep your eye on a woman performer named Brandi Carlile, who has kind of blown up and sold over 4 million albums in the last two and a half years. If you're a fan of folk music or a little bit light rock, she's going to be really tough to beat this year. She is friends to all. She's got a lot of really big record labels and management behind her. She's one of the nicest people that's working in the music industry. So I think Brandi Carlile is definitely going to have that Grammy bump in the coming days after Sunday, with a lot of people going to be knowing what her name is.
Yeah, we're at that point where I don't have to watch. I'll just watch social media on Monday, including that Eric Alper on Twitter and social media everywhere. Eric, thanks for this. Thanks for being a part of the show, and thanks for all you do.
Oh, thanks, Sheldon. We'll talk soon.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
And, yeah, I often think, okay, it won't influence whether or not you win, but they go, they've won an award, so let's invite them to perform. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. They'll be more likely to perform because they'll think, well, maybe I'm going to get that award because they did ask me to the room. And then Drake says, screw you guys. I got nothing.
Are you team Juno or team Drake here?
Pick
a side, McLeod.
I'm picking Stompin' Tom.
Oh, my. Just dodging the question.
Oh, yes, I am. I didn't know that Mike... You know, Mike from
Here,
the Carlton?
Mike?
Mike from the Carlton.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Campbell.
I know Mike. Yeah.
He had everything to do with the Junos coming to Halifax. He was on that committee. He made that pitch.
I don't really know him. I just kind of sit here while he's here talking to you.
Okay. No, I
like
think,
him, though.
You know what? I can understand why Drake's doing this. He doesn't need the Junos. And whether or not Canada... Nobody's going to go, he didn't come to the Junos. We shouldn't support him.
Okay. I got you down as hashtag Team Drake.
Okay.
Perfect.
All right, Dr. Boris Warm, right after this.